Welcome to the Smarter E podcast, a podcast for and with the creators of the new energy world. Hello, welcome back to the Smarter E podcast. Here's an interesting number. Using 20% of its land surface for solar plants, the United Arab Emirates could produce enough green hydrogen for export to match its current oil and gas revenue. Whether and when the UAE will reach that percentage is unclear. But what is certain is that the UAE, like many other countries in the MENA region, regard hydrogen as the new green oil. Thus, they are heavily investing in solar and wind energy and are working on becoming a leader in green hydrogen export. One of the Emirates that is specifically interesting is Dubai. Whether it's for its new record-breaking numbers with state-of-the-art solar power utilities, such as, for example, the Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum Solar Park, or for the construction of the first solar-powered electrolyzer for the production of green hydrogen in the MENA region. Hence, in this episode, we want to shed a light on the role of Dubai and the MENA region in the new energy world. Before we start, however, a quick shout-out to our partner for this episode, Hölle Electrolyzer, the stack company. With its innovative PEM technology, Hölle Electrolyzer is developing the future source of green hydrogen. The innovative PEM electrolyzer stack Prometheus is the result of more than 25 years of expertise and pioneering work by engineer, managing director, and head of development Stefan Hölle. Their goal is to make green hydrogen affordable and to reduce the production cost to less than 4 euros per kilogram. On board as the expert for this episode is Cornelius Mattes. Originally having worked as head of DWS, Deutsche Bank's investment arm in Italy, he left the banking sector 10 years ago and focused on renewable energies instead. Ever since, he's been a renowned investor and entrepreneur for various renewable energy projects in the MENA region, from large-scale utility projects to small-scale DER projects, earning himself a Solar Pioneer 2015 award. Most notably, he is the senior vice president of DII Desert Energy, one of the most well-known large-scale undertakings in the MENA region. Welcome, Cornelius.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Cornelius, maybe let's start with DII. 10 years ago, the Desert Tech Industrial Initiative made a big splash in the global media coverage with their grand vision of supplying Europe with green electricity from the MENA region. Ever since, the project has taken one or the other turn and refocused. So some of people regard it as a failed project. Others might argue that like any startup, it just took a few critical pivots to get the product right. So how do you assess the past 10 years of DII?
Well, that has been certainly an adventure. And when we started in 2009, obviously there was a massive attention, press coverage, leading sometimes to quite unrealistic expectations. And also, I have to say, what DII, as originally Desert Tech Industrial Initiative, really did was not always depicted correctly in the press. So looking back what has been done and achieved, I think it's worth to notice that 10 years ago, it was all exotic. Nobody would have believed that renewables can become such a fast and amazing success story. So I think this is the most important development, that renewables has become mainstream and nobody is questioning the role of renewables. Renewables has become, with solar and wind, the cheapest form of energy. And we have been pushing for this before, you know, this development started and proved many skeptics, of course, wrong. And we've always been bullish on solar and wind to harvest the natural resources. And, you know, the fact that we've been pushing for this with groundbreaking studies like Desert Power 2050, published in 2012, still widely quoted, I think is probably the most important achievement. Now, more recently, we have introduced our Desert Tech 3.0 mission, which includes, alongside green electrons, green molecules. And I think green hydrogen, green molecules is also the main topic for today. And I think we will speak about why we believe that probably green molecules can be produced even at more competitive prices, and then probably traded, shipped to Europe and to world markets more easily.
Those are exactly the points we're going to dive into in the coming minutes. So thanks for making it easy for me to build a bridge. So you already said green molecules, that's a new focus that I think was not part of the grand vision 10 years ago. So looking at it from today, what's the medium-term significance of hydrogen and how critical is its role in the new energy world?
Well, Zakis, this is an interesting one. I think it's safe to say that even the men on the street, policymakers, recognize the significance of hydrogen and the fact that it, you know, might be the missing piece in the energy transition. So there has been a massive shift in opinion, I think, in this recognition. Why is that? And why, since last year, everybody is all of a sudden talking about hydrogen? And Goldman Sachs came out last week, hydrogen can become a $12 trillion market by 2050. So the numbers, they are just huge. Bank of America came out with a similar number. So the game changer is the fact that renewable energy, as I mentioned before, had a record success story. So the prices are in the MENA region firmly between 1 and 3 cents per kilowatt hour, which is of course a revolution. And this makes green hydrogen competitive in the medium term and probably quicker than many would believe. Now also the fact that hydrogen is basically complementary to electrons. Hydrogen can be easier stored long-term, you know, converted, for example, to other green molecules like ammonia or shipped via pipelines or with big ships globally to world markets. This flexibility is an important factor. I mentioned the long-term, the seasonal storage, and then the variety of applications. You know, we are not speaking only about power generation. We are speaking about industrial uses like for steel, which can difficultly reduce CO2 emissions without green hydrogen. Chemicals, of course, the fertilizer industry, but looking at mobility, there's a lot of fuel cell buses, already even trains on the road today, and then even applications like heating or cooling. So I think the sheer variety, this is an important one, you know, combined with this versatility, the fact that hydrogen can be an energy carrier, and then extremely competitive prices nowadays.
Before we start talking about the prices, what are the conditions for hydrogen production in the Middle East? Because I hear some call them almost ideal. Maybe you could go into details there.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned before, the cost per kilowatt hour for solar and wind energy in the whole MENA region. So speaking not only about the UAE you mentioned initially, in the UAE we are close to 1 cent per kilowatt hour, and it will only be a question, probably latest in 2 years we will be below 1 cent. And in countries with lower credit ratings, such as Jordan, Egypt, or Morocco, you know, the price is even very low, close to 2 cents for solar. And then below 2 cents, 1.5 cents between Saudi Arabia and maybe 2.5 or 3 cents in countries like Egypt, Morocco for wind power. So this is obviously due to the fact that the MENA region enjoys, you know, one of the world's best solar resources and wind resources. And this combined with land almost free, abundant, you know, with now a proven track record of a big deployment, successful post 10 gigawatt capacity of solar and wind in the MENA region. This all combined, you know, brings down the cost. And, you know, in Europe, obviously, land is very limited. There are a lot of environmental challenges, whereas in the MENA region, you know, in the deserts, you have just all the space you want and the conditions, they're really almost perfect.
So you've been there for almost a decade already. In your experience with long-term projects, how do you see the chances then in short term and medium term for these visions, these projects in the pipeline to be realized and for the MENA region to really tap into its potential when it comes to green hydrogen?
Well, I think we've seen over the last 10 years an increasing momentum. And with big skeptics, particularly in the, let's say, start of the 2010s, there has been more and more projects, countries coming out with big tenders, and then countries like Egypt delivering record-breaking among the world's largest solar parks, but same success story in Jordan, in Egypt, in Morocco, or in the UAE with, you know, a single 2 gigawatt solar park now with the world's lowest tariff and a 1.2 gigawatt solar park connected already for almost 2 years to the grid. So I think in this context, well, the region has become a machinery for utility scale solar and wind projects. And this has just been executed. And now I think there's no doubt anymore that this itself is, you know, pushing and massively accelerating the energy transition. Now, for green hydrogen, there is obviously other ingredients needed in addition to solar and wind energy, water. But the water can be produced. We've analyzed this extensively. It can be desalinated with new capacities from seawater. So there's not a big challenge. And by the way, only a minor cost in the business case of approximately 1%. But logistics need to be considered. So how can we then store, transport the green hydrogen to local markets, maybe convert to other green molecules like ammonia and export to world markets. So this is much more complex, but one important point I would like to mention, the MENA region has been, particularly in the GCC, obviously with oil and gas, one of the global centers, and there's a lot of synergies. And while oil and gas is in a historic decline, I think it is clear now that, you know, there was already the start of the end of the oil and gas era. So many people, even I know, they lost jobs in energy recently here in oil and gas. And green hydrogen can be a wonderful opportunity to repurpose, you know, existing infrastructure expertise and to provide many people future-proof jobs. And jobs is also, you know, for the MENA region in renewables, this is the thing we are always putting first, because this is, apart from clean energy, what the region here needs is a job, jobs for young people, you know, to look at stability and prosperous growth here in the region.
Absolutely, and specifically that stability factor is one that I suppose in the region cannot be underestimated. You already mentioned the logistical part. Before I dive into that, I know that as an ex-banker, you love numbers. Could you give me some numbers in regards to a timeline, like which volume do you see produced in what year?
Well, in July this year, we have seen a bold announcement in NEOM by our partners Aqua Power and NEOM itself. Peter Therium, the former CEO of RWE and Innogy in Germany, he's on the DI advisory board, has been driving this together with the CEO of Aqua Power. And this has been really a project of global significance. Why? Due to the sheer size, you know, of gigawatt scale electrolyzer capacity, solar and wind capacity respectively. So this is a huge number. It's the largest project of such a kind which has been announced at this point of time. And in addition, it's a purely commercial project. So there is an additional partner in the project, a company called Air Products, and they guarantee the offtake. So this all together, I think, is a very courageous move to show the market that green hydrogen will soon become competitive. And the target is to produce 1 kilogram of green hydrogen when the project will be fully operational in 2025 at $1.5. So $1.5 per kilogram, I repeat. This is a very low number, almost competitive with fossil-based hydrogen, and it's quite a statement. We believe that looking back 10 years on this massive renewable energy success story, this can be replicated, and I'm sure when at 2030 we will look back how the 2020s were, we will recognize that probably there has been a revolution in this field as well, and probably even the optimists, probably they will be proven wrong, and you know the market will move much faster, because the low prices and this combined with a massive agenda in Europe, with Europe's hydrogen strategy, which was published in July, where you know the 2x40 gigawatt initiative by Hydrogen Europe and DI was also incorporated as key pillars. But also with the German and other hydrogen strategies, there is a massive pressure in Europe to decarbonize very quickly, which puts pressure on companies to source in a few years huge amounts of green hydrogen. So the need is there, the demand is there. And at the same time, Europe will play a role in also, you know, bridging this gap for the next few years between gray, black hydrogen and green hydrogen. So I think in this context, Europe will play a very important role as, you know, you can say an enabler here, as an important partner. So the aspect of international corporations is of paramount importance here.
That brings into play the whole question around logistics. How can green hydrogen, green molecules be transported to the world markets? How does it get to Europe? How does it get to other regions in the world?
Yeah, that's a good question. Zakis, there's several possibilities. So the most logic way to transport huge amounts of green hydrogen would obviously be a pipeline. Pipelines for the same capacity can transport between 10 to 20 times compared to an electricity line. So there is existing pipelines in the Mediterranean. There's only one existing electricity connection, subsea cable between Morocco and Spain. But there are three pipelines across the Mediterranean, Algeria via Morocco and directly to Spain, and via Tunisia to Italy. So pipeline is the most cost-effective way long-term. But green molecules can also be in general an option. So hydrogen can be converted, for example, to ammonia with the Haber-Bosch process. Ammonia is a common way, it is an existing world market, to ship the hydrogen. There is an existing fleet of approximately 100 ammonia ships globally. So this is one possibility and is the preferred way, as we hear from NEOM, from Saudi Arabia, at least in the first phase. But there is other possibilities, for example, to convert or to inject the hydrogen in liquid organic hydrogen carriers and ship it again in like big boats to Europe. And then again, energy is required to separate the hydrogen from the carrier fluid. So this is an interesting possibility, which might play a significant role and has also other advantages of, for example, non-toxic characteristics. So that's an interesting way. And there's a lot of research and development. So I could well imagine that in a few years from now, there will be completely new possibilities, which we don't even think about. Just to mention, hydrogen can also be liquefied. There is a first ship of such a kind by a Japanese company, but it needs to be cooled down to minus 253 degrees. So this requires one third of the transported hydrogen. So from an energy balance perspective and also realistically a capacity perspective, we don't believe that this will be the solution for the coming 10 years.
All right. Thank you, Cornelius, for these wonderful insights and numbers and case studies.
Well, thanks to you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks to the Smart AE and your colleagues for having me. It was a pleasure.
Well, what are my personal takeaways here? I think so far at the Smart AE, at least in my podcasts, we've mainly discussed solar power and electric energy storages. So it's quite interesting to see that hydrogen really is something that we have to consider as well, specifically when we move away, for example, from transport and logistics and look in industrial use cases. Also quite critical, just to bear in mind that Europe, for example, still imports 80% of its primary energy demand, mostly in the form of oil and gas. So that is something where green hydrogen will be very interesting to look at. And here on the long run, it will be quite interesting to see what the partnership between Europe and the MENA region will be like.
Stay tuned for more episodes of the Smarter EE podcast.
Are you interested in innovative technologies in the field of solar and energy storage in the Middle East? Then take a look at InterSolar Middle East, the most powerful solar platform in the MENA region. Further information can be found online at intersolar.ae/en/home. See you in Dubai.